All right, here we are. Sorry, everybody, for the wait. We were trying having some webcam issues.
Which are unresolved.
Yeah, so we're gonna have Link from Zelda 2 joining us, and also joining
Hi.
us is Bam from one of like my favorite YouTube channels, Dome Candy Games.
Thank you
Thanks
so
for
much.
yeah, thanks for joining us. I think I've commented this on your videos before, but I always like you're always like fit in the very subtle fart joke. Well, maybe it's not like super subtle, but it's always just like very quickly.
Koi admires your dedication to
That's awesome. Yeah, I guess I initially started my reviews as I kind of wanted to do the Beakman's World thing, you know, lots of sound effects and, you know, whooshes and stuff like that. But so I've done that with some of my videos, but it's a lot of work, you
Yeah, it
know,
takes a lot
so
of patience to like
it's
put in
kind
tons of
of a
sound
time
work.
thing.
Yeah, I've been trying this year. I've tried to make a stronger commitment to the whole sound effect thing. I used to be really lazy about it, but it's definitely an improvement. I mean, Corey was doing a lot more sound effects than I was, and I kind of just do them as I go now, rather than like, because if I say it used to be I saved it for the end. And it's like no, not doing it.
You almost have to like script them in, you know, and then even if you don't do that, you just forget about it, you know.
I feel like I saw some of your videos a while back, and I was like, hey, this guy's a big N64 guy, and so I remember seeing some of your videos, and then when I was getting ready to do the win back episode, I was like, oh, awesome! Like, I bet no one's done a video on this game, and I searched and I find your video. I'm like, dang it! But I'm still gonna do it anyway.
Oh man, I had the same feeling. Like I was kind of scouring YouTube when I thought of doing Winback, and it's like, dude, this is a hidden gem. I love the game. I think it's a really fun game.
Yeah, I mean, when I did my quasi review, if you want to call it, we don't like to think of our things as reviews, but we did a video on it. And I hadn't played it before, but I mean, I'd always had my eye on it, so I was surprised that it had not been delved that much into.
And it's interesting. I mean, it does so many things well, and it's kind of the first of its kind. Like how does some perfect storm like that happen in 1999, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy, and from a developer that you just absolutely would not expect. I was trying to see if I could come up with like a theme for another episode that would be like Japanese third person cover shooters, and I don't want to feature Win Back again. I was thinking like maybe I could come up with like three, and the only three that I can come up with are Vanquish and Binary Domain. I can't come up with anything else. I mean, those three might be the only ones for all I know. I mean, you could Time Crisis kind of, but well, that's not first or that's not third person. I'm talking third person cover shooters. But yeah.
I mean, is Koei Japanese? I thought it was Korean
Yeah.
studio.
No, they are Japanese. It's Koei Tecmo now.
Oh, that's
They're
right.
merged, and the specific division of Koei that did it, Omega Force, like they're mainly known for Dynasty Warriors and all the multitude spin-offs of that series, Hyrule Warriors, Dragon Quest Heroes, etc., and so on.
I really worried, I guess I thought they were Korean because all those Dynasty Warriors are, I think, Korean epics, right?
It's based on Chinese history.
Oh, Chinese, okay.
Like the Romance of the Three
But
Kingdoms and stuff like
right,
that.
yeah, but it is Japanese. It is Japanese made. But yeah, it's interesting because you are kind of like, I mean, you've got this big N64 focus, and we were before we did our N64 RGB episode, we were like so many people were requesting that. And yet I felt like I was one of the few people that like actually still said good things about the N64.
Yeah, That's an interesting observation. I mean, it seems like there's like a certain age group, I think, now that's kind of coming into the whole collecting, business, that are a little bit younger than me, like maybe like late 20s or something, that kind of grew up with the N64, and now it's really getting popular in terms of collecting, in terms
right.
of all these videos.
It's hitting that right time. But like, generally speaking, with most of the people that I talk to about video games online, it seemed like people were like, oh, the N64, I can't go back to that system, it's so terrible. I'm like, well, I still like it, you know. Yeah. But
I mean, that has merit, you know. It's pretty terrible to look at now, but yeah, I love it.
I still like the controller. I just have such good memories of it because I was the right age for it. I think when it hit, I was 12 when the N64 came out, and I was like just starting to get into like paying attention to upcoming games and stuff, and it was just a great time to just be fully immersed in that sort of thing. And that's why, even though I don't consider it one of my top favorite systems, I mean, it's up there, but I mean, you know, I still just have this huge soft spot for it. I really love it. And so it was interesting because, you know, I was like, the reaction to this N64 episode is going to be very interesting because there's N64 fans out there, but they aren't on the general internet. You don't see them, but this video is going to bring them out of the woodwork. And for whatever reason, N64 stuff on our channel just blows up.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
We just like there's a lot of just, you know, there's a lot of fans of the series or of the console that just kind of seem like they come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Which,
speaking of which, Corey, I you know, in all my rush to get ready for the stream, I have to apologize that I actually only got the N64 portion of the next episode recorded.
Oh, geez.
I haven't done the NES portion yet because it took me so long to get set up to do the shoot. I don't know what was the problem. So if we end the stream relatively on time, I'm going to try to edit the N64 part, ship it off to you, and then tomorrow, right after work, I promise I'll do the NES part.
Wow. I'm excited. N64 stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and start.
Yeah.
All right, check it out.
So, I've really been in a doom mood lately myself. I don't have a ton of history with the series. I have sort of a bit of a thing, like I'm not like super hardcore into Wolfenstein, but I've always had a bit of a thing for it. Doom, very little experience, but I recently played the I guess it was Ultimate Doom. I played co-op in that, and you know, it was just a ton of fun. I mean, there's like no death penalty, which is, you know, is kind of lame, but playing online that way, you're inevitably going to finish a level, but I was just surprised how much fun it was. Like, I felt like I should not be having as much fun as I was, just like kind of navigating these mazes of levels. Like, I'm like, you know, come on, there's like not actually any meat here, but it was just like fun for some reason.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really good to hear from, I guess, a relatively new player, right? Like, I mean, did you play it back in the day?
I probably maybe play a little bit. I played when I say more Wolfenstein, I don't mean I played a ton of Wolfenstein, but I had more experience with Wolfenstein. I probably played a little Doom. I played a little Chex Quest.
What is that? What is Chex Quest?
Chex Quest? Well, you might have a more interesting perspective on it. You explain it.
So somehow or another, Chex got permission from id to do like a little, I think it's like a 4 or 5 level pack that they packaged on a CD in their serial. And
so it's like checks the cereal.
Yeah, checks the cereal. And it's so funny because it's like it's designed to be sort of kid friendly and like non-violent. So you're like a space you are a Chex. Like you are like the block of Chex, you know.
You have like arms and legs.
Yeah, but you've got arms and legs and you can use these weapons.
You're like a Chex space marine, basically.
Yeah, a Chex space marine, basically, yeah. And you're supposed to rid the planet of these aliens, but instead of killing them, you actually like zap them back to where they came from, you know?
Like the most non-violent thing you can do.
Yeah. Just it's kind of like Noah's Ark. It's kind of like Noah's Ark 3D, you know? But what's...
Uh-oh.
And I remember getting... I didn't even like the cereal back in the day, but whenever that came out, I guess it was 96 or something like that, I was like, oh, let's get some checks just so I can get this game.
Yeah, I played a good bit of it. I don't remember if I totally finished it, but yeah, it was, you know, it was fun. So, you know, the thing that appeals to me, like I would maybe look at a first-person shooter or maybe play a tiny bit at a friend's house, like Turok or something, but I never like wanted to own a first-person shooter until GoldenEye, and I played GoldenEye. I'm like, this is really cool. I really like this. I want to own it. And nice. But I never considered myself a first-person shooter guy, and I still don't consider myself a first-person shooter guy. But I will play first-person shooters. I don't know. It's kind of a weird spectrum that I fall on in terms of first-person shooters, because I either want them to be like super basic and like not a lot of mechanics going on, or like there's just like some interesting hook or something that just makes it feel a little different. Like for example, like BioShock, I think of like that's a first-person shooter, but your second weapon is magic. You know,
yeah.
You know, I can get into that, but otherwise, I want to be super simple. Like, I will play a first-person shooter with jumping, but I would prefer it wasn't there. You know, I like a GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, Time Splitters. The more like GoldenEye it is, the better. But overall, simpler the better. Something that appealed to me, you know, playing Doom, you know, just here in the past month or two. I like how there's no vertical aiming.
Yeah, it just automatically like, kind of does
like,
it.
Why do we have vertical aiming? You know, cut that crap out. Who needs?
It's so funny. I mean, that's it's a limitation. You know, it's kind of a workaround. It was a hack at the time. But it's this really warm and fuzzy nostalgic thing for me to play. You know, vanilla Doom, and not have to worry about looking, aiming up and down. And I love, you know, on my channel, I have tons of Brutal Doom content, and I love Brutal Doom, but it's like, it's nice to go back to that, you know, coffee filter in front of the face, a vanilla Doom that, you know, terrible resolution, no aiming up and down. I don't know,
that's
something about
it. It does kind of like, you mean like the glove kind of looks like a coffee filter, or like, you mean like the actual, what do you?
Just in terms of resolution.
Okay.
It's just amazing to, and for Doom to have such a community behind it that it's, you know, been on life support since it came out, porting it to system and having Z-Doom kind of breathe new life into it, you know, higher resolutions and all this stuff. It's pretty amazing.
You call it Z Doom? Is that like because you can aim vertically?
Oh, Z Doom is a source port.
Okay.
For PC, yeah. One of, you know, a several dozen, I'm sure.
Now, when we first opened the chat room here, a few people were like, ooh, Doom on the 32X. But, I mean, just glancing at it, this looks fine. Like, what's the downside? You know, I don't know I did just play Doom, but I'm not all that familiar with the layout of the levels, etc. I mean, it looks smooth.
This version?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
So what's...
I think the reason I chose this one is because, I mean... The only other ones, I mean, I, this is like one of the first times I've actually like played a game on this stream that I don't actually own. I am playing this with an EverDrive this time.
Okay.
It was like either between this or, you know, I have Doom 3 on the PS3 that has the, you know, it has like the Xbox Live Arcade versions on there, that, or is like ported to the, you know, PS3.
Yeah.
And those are cool because it has, you know, it has like strafing and stuff. Because it has like, you can use it with like two, like the dual analog stick. But yeah, I think this is, it doesn't look too bad. It's interesting because it almost looks like full motion video. Like the actual like game window.
I'm thinking about it. Think about looking for Doom 64 at Too Many Games.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you should pick it up. It's pretty good, and it's a unique entry in the Doom series. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, and I've always heard people generally say it's like actually really really good, like way better than anyone would expect who hasn't played it.
Absolutely. Oh, that's a kill. That's a kill pot, I think.
But I mean, you know, like now that, you know, a lot of people are viewing as Doom as like having this huge comeback. It's interesting because I had no real interest in the new one. And just based on like word of mouth, I think word of mouth is really doing it some favors.
It was interesting because Bethesda did not send out review copies, as I understand it. So,
correct.
Like, people kind of took that as like a "ooh, it's going to be no good" sort of sign.
Yeah.
I remember like people weren't too sure what to think of it, like when it was shown at E3 last year and stuff like that. So, people were not expecting.
Well, they redid it. I guess they redid like the whole game.
Or something. Really?
Like they scrapped it at one point.
Probably not since last year, but
no, I don't think since last year. But it's been through development hell, as far as I understand.
It's really cool to see it like do well after being in development. Yeah, well, I mean that's what I meant.
It's very cool.
It was, you know, like I think that when they first like released info on it, it was like everyone thought it looked like a Call of Duty kind of thing, and then like they scrapped the whole thing and then redid it. Like I mean, this was a while back when that happened.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Bethesda made some, I think, pretty weird and maybe terrible choices in terms of getting the word out, in terms of the open beta. You know, a lot of old school fans of Doom really panned the open beta and the multiplayer in general. I don't have much of a feeling about the multiplayer. I mean, I thought it was, you know, mildly fun, but I was more interested in the campaign.
Right.
Yeah. But so you have all this negative feedback when the open beta came out, and no one's excited about it. I was hearing, I think, on Pat and Ian's podcast, the...
Completely Unnecessary podcast.
Yeah, the CU podcast. Ian was saying... no one was interested in pre-ordering Doom, you know, in his shop. And so it seemed like they set it up for failure, and then it comes out, you know, and then they don't have review copies sent out.
Yeah.
And then it comes out and finally gets reviewed, and everyone just absolutely loves the campaign. And, you know, the multiplayer is about what everyone expected based on the beta. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, it was...
I'm definitely planning to get it.
Jeez,
these guys
are killing me.
I've got such a backlog of modern games right now, but I'll grab it when it goes down to, you know, 40 or 30 or whatever. I'm definitely looking forward to it. And, you know, like I just have zero interest in competitive multiplayer anymore. Like there's a handful of games that I'll still play, like, you know, Mario Kart or Smash, and that's about it. Like competitive shooters. Like I love to play shooter co-op.
Co-op
is great, but competitive multiplayer, I'm just like not at that point in my life anymore. You know, I just can't really sit down and get into it. I was never good at it anyway. But I always like to play like Perfect Dark on teams against bots. Yeah. I did better at that than playing against humans.
Unless you put it on what was it, perfect difficulty or something like that?
Dark
or dark, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, they were insane, yeah.
Yeah, but it was even those you could figure out ways to exploit their AI with the Farsight and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, good times with all that. But
good times. Totally.
So Bam, like the impression I always got from your show is that do you work in motion graphics?
I do, yeah.
Okay, that's kind of right there. But I'd kind of, it's the impression that I'd gotten because all your stuff is really, really cool.
Oh, thanks.
I like that you did that, that 3-part review of Need for Speed. I love the first Need for Speed. So it was really cool. I used to love to turn around and drive towards the camera to wreck. Like I base all my driving, how much I like driving games based on how good the crashes are, essentially. Mm.
Oh yeah, I mean that game when it came out, I mean, you know, you've seen the review, but I mean when it came out it was just like this is now my Matchbox cars in a video game, you know. And it was nothing had quite been done to that level before, and it was just nostalgically for me it's just amazing, you know. But yeah, I do motion graphics professionally. And I just have this channel on the side. It's kind of my nostalgia outlet, video game outlet. It'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying that's generally I could tell because of your intro and stuff. You know, you can tell.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
But I was gonna say back on Doom related stuff. It's funny. There's we're gonna be releasing a video to our Patreon subscribers soon. That's me and another friend, Drumble of the Backloggery. We go through this box or a bag
of stuff,
old stuff, old game stuff
from your uncle.
From my uncle.
I was like, it sounds like, you know, like you'd expect it to be like, you know, like dirty, you know, like it'd be like kind of a
old game stuff bag, mystery bag,
a bag of stuff, a mystery bag from my uncle.
but anyway, so it's like
a game sack.
But it's mostly old PC game stuff and some Nintendo books. But anyway, we'll be releasing that sometime, I don't know, next week or so for our Patreon patrons.
And there's a lot of Doom stuff in there, right?
Well, there is some Doom stuff in there, but the thing I wanted to point out is just, I think, an interesting conversation piece. I wish my webcam was working because I'd love to point to this, even though you probably couldn't read it that well anyway. But it says in big letters on the thing, $9.99. So it was a relatively inexpensive Doom player's guide, not super thick, but it's got a lot of articles and stuff, sort of just little facts and things. Like there's a little article about IBM banning Doom because people were bringing their servers down at lunchtime.
Yeah.
But what was so the funny part was there's this section toward the back that says worldwide players looking for Doom multiplayer, who are like, oh my gosh, what is this? And it's literally people submitted to have their IP address and email address published in this book for
everybody
to play. So it's crazy. I mean, you know, we get lobby servers nowadays, but you get your name published in a book. fuck to hope that you might find someone to play Doom with.
Like, that is pretty fascinating. I mean, I guess that's the days of modems where you know, hey, I want to play cooperatively, so call me up on my modem.
Yeah,
like,
it's
who's out there, you know?
How, like, are these people just, like, sitting on their computer, like hoping someone might connect them on Doom, you know?
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. It's crazy. I want to make, like, a documentary about these people now, like you know, the people who wanted to play Doom in 94 or whatever.
yeah
it's nuts.
I mean, people, you know, we're so spoiled now. It's just like, you know, hop on the Xbox and get in the lobby and you're playing within a few minutes. But like, the Dark Ages were the Dark Ages. Like, it was hard. I never played Doom multiplayer back in the day, just because of that fact. You know, I didn't know enough people that had it on PC.
Was multiplayer part of the original Doom release?
It was. They had deathmatch and co-op, I believe, but it was only through modem connections.
Yeah, you can only do it like two people because you had to connect directly to them. I'm like,
yeah. Level. And I think later on, there was some piece of technology that a fan, I may be getting this wrong, but I think a fan made a program basically that kind of helped people connect, but it was still all modem based. I mean, it wasn't anything like internet. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That multiplayer was part of the original Doom until pretty recently. And I had always been under the impression that GoldenEye invented the deathmatch, but
No.
Maybe it was just the console deathmatch. I'm not sure if there was a console deathmatch before then.
No,
so someone in the chat got it right. The Duango was the name of the program that helped people connect. But yeah, John Romero coined the term deathmatch.
Wow.
At least that's the story, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't think GoldenEye called it deathmatch.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why
it's too violent for Nintendo at the time, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just multiplayer. And you know, it's crazy how GoldenEye's multiplayer was I think it was like mostly like programmed by one guy in secret, like a month or two before release.
Wait, GoldenEye's deathmatch?
Yeah.
Yeah, the entire multiplayer in GoldenEye. Like, you didn't even tell... of his name.
Was it David Doak?
No. Steve Ellis, I think, is the guy.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, and GoldenEye, the team was like, I want to say 8 or 9 people.
Yeah, and they didn't tell the Rare bosses about it because, like, they would have said no.
Yeah,
they just
exactly.
did it.
Yeah,
and then they once they saw they had it, they're like, "Wait, this is way better than we ever thought it would be. We got to put this in there."
Well, I mean, I guess it just worked pretty quickly and easily. Like, it's crazy, and it became probably the game's main selling point.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just such a last minute thing. Like, GoldenEye is just like such. It's a game that never had any right to be as good or successful as it but
I remember when that was coming out, it was like, I can't believe that there. Because GoldenEye was like, the movie was old at that point. It was a couple of years old.
Yeah, and Nintendo, like, didn't even want it anymore. Like, they didn't want it anymore. But then I guess they turned it into, like, a pretty good game. It was going to be on rails at one point.
Yeah, it was going to be, like, a Virtual Cop Time Crisis type thing at first.
Mm-hmm.
They started developing for the SNES.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, a really long development period, especially in those days. And suddenly the movie is, you know, 2 years old by the time it comes out, by the time the game comes out. Pretty crazy, but...
And I kind of feel like it lacks the polish that Rare's other games have, but it's got such a strong foundation. That just
it's funny. I just recently I played it the other day for the first time in several months, I'd say, and I just recently got a CRT in the first time in like 10 years, you know. And nice. I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's so responsive. but yeah, I hooked up GoldenEye and I was just kind of just like chuckling to myself about all the little things that are so wrong with the game. I mean, there's just, you know, all these little things.
I can't beat the third level.
That are just a little sloppy, you know, but.
See, when I just played this, I was playing multiplayer, and we just like infinitely respawned. So it was it was too easy, but it was still just fun, like exploring the levels.
I am noticing with this that it's missing some of the textures from like PC Doom,
mm-hmm.
and some of the lighting effects are either like missing or just a little bit different.
I was surprised the version that I played. I was surprised how many lighting effects there were.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Wolfenstein, play Wolfenstein a few minutes, and then jump over to Doom, and
I honestly did not expect Doom to be as big of a jump up from Wolfenstein as it is. It's huge.
Yeah. Which is kind of what cemented it as such a, you know, landmark in technology, you know?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I would highly recommend, if you're interested in the story at all, Masters of Doom, the book called Masters of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about basically how John Carmack and John Romero ended up together at id, and then the other artists at id, too, and just how Doom was created. And it's got some of the craziest stories I've ever heard, like in terms of game design stories. I mean, it's insane. Very interesting read.
That's cool. I mean, are they still friends?
I read something recently that said John Romero was talking to some journalist, and he said, "No one talks to John Carmack anymore." But I guess the other guys kind of talk a little bit, but Carmack is just kind of in his own world, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, now that he's, like, doing something with Oculus, right? Isn't that what
he's
doing?
Yeah, he's at Oculus.
But, I mean, he was, like...
He was at id until just a couple years ago, right?
He was still working at id.
And, like, coming up with, like, really, like random, like, technology and stuff. Like, isn't he the one that discovered how to, like, make curved... like polygons or something like that for Doom 3? Was it Doom 3? Or Quake 3. Quake 3 Arena. Was that the one that has like the curve? Like, he did something with that.
I don't know. He's been the driving force behind a lot of their engine technology.
Yeah.
I mean, since the, you know, first days of id. I don't know. It's hard to tell with modern games, you know, how much of a hand he had in things like Rage or or Doom 3 even.
I never played Rage, but I like, you know, its engine, I think, was the first to do, as far as I know, that the automatic resolution scaling. Which Wolfenstein, the New Order, uses that engine, and I it's just like so seamless. Like I never noticed it over the course of the game, but basically, anytime it's going to drop, if it's going to drop below 60 frames, if it's going to miss a frame, it will render the next frame at a lower resolution to make up for it. So it's like. Like the way I read for the, you know, a different developer handled Wolfenstein. But they said that the way that the engine is made, because they used the same, id Tech 4 or whatever was Rage. And they said, like, the way the engine is built, it would be like we would have to make an effort to make this game not 60 frames. Because... it's just it's like basically hard coded into it.
Huh. That's interesting.
I knew where I was going, but I gotta be getting close. I'm so afraid of dying on this level again. It's It's a shotgun, guys, to get me.
I forget how many levels are in it.
There's a lot of levels in it. Or there's episodes. There's like 3 episodes.
Yeah, there's episodes. Yeah, that's how it's...
Yeah, 3 episodes. I think each episode is 8 levels and then a secret level. So
something like that.
Yeah, so like 27 maps total.
We, me and my friend that I was co-oping Doom with, we started to do Thy Flesh Consumed, and it was kind of crazy. Like, you know, even though we, you know, because of the way it was respawning, you know, even though we essentially had unlimited lives, we were just like, I don't know. And I heard that it was like made by a totally different team, and they didn't pay a lot of regard to the lore, if you want to call it that. And apparently there's like no rhyme or reason about like why you're fighting the demons and where you are, and it's just not a lot of thought was put into the where and why.
In this?
Right. In the fourth episode that was released, okay. I think it was released for Ultimate Doom, if I'm not mistaken.
You're correct. Yeah, the exclusively for Ultimate Doom. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's supposedly in the end you learn that Doom Guy had a pet rabbit, and it was all because the demons, you know, invaded Earth, and you see at the end of Doom 1, you see this rabbit, and then you see, because the demons invaded Earth, you see that the rabbit is impaled on a stake, like it's just dead. And it, apparently the fourth episode released for Ultimate Doom reveals that the rabbit was Doom Guy's pet, and so that's why he's blowing up demons again. So
never thought
Doom Guy is the pet rabbit sort, but you know, I mean,
yeah.
Oh, so am I screwed here? Do I not really get out of here? How do I get? Oh, there we go. There is that. See, to be honest, I haven't, like, I played the shareware of this a lot when I was like very young, obviously.
Oh yeah.
And I've like never really owned it other than that. You know, I played on my neighbor's Packard Bell, or maybe yes, Packard Bell. I'm pretty sure it was, yeah. And I've never really been like a PC gamer at all. And even back then, it was like really. It was. I mean, you kind of touch on this in your Need for Speed, where you talk about like how much work he had to go through to get Need for Speed sound working.
Yeah, just like tiny little problems. And I feel like it was easier, maybe a little easier, way back in the day, because, you know, say pre 1998, there wasn't even any. There weren't graphics cards. You know, you would just have your standard office computer, you know, and that would be your gaming machine, you know. Mm-hmm. Boot something up in DOS and bada bing. But yeah, not always that simple, but
yeah, I mean, you know, like I learned a little bit about, is that where I came in? That's where I came from. Oh jeez, I forget that, you know, going into the map doesn't stop everything. You can die in the map.
Yeah.
But I mean, like a Packard Bell, and you know, like that was. It was like that. I think he had Doom. He had obviously like Wolfenstein. I remember what was the M1 Abrams tank, like the tank game. Is it M1 tank or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But he was, you know, he was very into having that PC. It just didn't. It was just too much work for me. I was just happy enough with my, you know, my Master System or Genesis, and just plugging the cartridge in and done.
I mean,
I guess
my family didn't even have like a PC until was early 97.
97?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I had my own PC.
So you probably had Windows 95 or 98.
It was Windows 95 starting with, and I played around with a computer at my aunt and uncle's house now and then. You know, that's how I got a little experience playing Wolfenstein and Myst. And then when we got our computer, like, it came with this crappy game called Magic Carpet. I could never figure it out. And it was a compact Presario, and it was like so crappy. I got Myst, and like I was able to play Myst on it decently enough as far as I remember. But I later got the PC version of Final Fantasy VII, because I didn't have a PlayStation yet. And it was completely unplayable. The FMVs played upside down. And the gameplay, like, even over the pre-rendered backgrounds, was just chugging along at just a completely unplayable speed.
So you can finally experience that on the PS4 now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I borrowed a PS1 from a friend and played through it, and then I finally got my own PS1, I think, in 99. But yeah, that we were late getting onto the whole computer thing. My dad had a Commodore VIC-20. I messed around on it minimally, but I mean, it was the sort of thing that, like I think a coworker talked him into, like, oh, you know, you need this thing, and he never really used it.
Spent all this money on it.
Yeah, I have no idea how much a Commodore VIC-20 cost, but you have it now,
don't you?
We sold it.
And I bought another one, like, in the box.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember you showing me, like, the...
For, like, $20. I love the box. It's super, super late 70s, early 80s, whenever it's from.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. I mean, you know, early 90s, probably until, like, the late 90s, computers were just really, really expensive. I remember our first sort of computer that my family got was a HP. Oh, actually, it's back there. I don't know if we can see it, but back there on the step with the Nerf gun on top of it.
On the top?
Yeah. But, I mean, I think it was like $3,000. You know, it's a Pentium, 90 megahertz, 8 megs of RAM. I mean, it's amazing to think that, like, today I can get a really solid gaming PC for, like, under $1,000, probably. And that was just, you know, your standard sort of multimedia computer. Windows 3.1, someone in the chat said, wow. Anybody actually start with Windows 3.1? Yes, I did.
I did too. I mean, I got a Packard Bell from, when I think, maybe it was, I didn't own the computer. It might have been my father's.
Yeah, I eventually got to use a laptop that my dad's work didn't need anymore, like probably just a few years later. And so that was like the first time I had my computer. But I didn't use it as a laptop. I had it connected to a monitor. Mm. But yeah, and you know, so we didn't have the internet even until probably, I want to say, like, maybe early 98. So that was like, we were all late on getting on that. And we start off with CompuServe for the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Which was so, like I was like, I almost wish I didn't have internet, because now I'm wasting all this time trying to load stuff that's never going to load, and may as well just not have the internet.
Well, what's funny, you know, like, I like to talk about that time, you know, for me, you know, like, I think when I finally had internet at home, it was definitely with AOL, but I use Prodigy at my friend's house a lot. I remember going on Prodigy and looking at the BBS on there and reading about ways to resurrect General Leo in Final Fantasy III.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, we switched to AOL after,
how do I bring this,
you know,
thing up? How do I bring up the... I see the exit, but I don't know how to get to it.
I think you have to raise... You have to raise the floor.
Yeah, I have to raise the floor, but I don't know where to go.
Gotta find a switch somewhere.
Is there a way for me to see, like, a more up-to-date stream of the gameplay, or is it...
I wish that there was a way. You know, like, I wonder if there's a way I could ever figure out how to do it to send it through. You know, I could... If I really wanted
like through to Skype or something.
You know, I could probably do it if I wanted to. I would have to stream in a lower resolution, but if I, did my gameplay at 720p, I could probably send it to... I have two capture cards in my system, and I could probably send one through Skype to the... you know, the people that that are on the chat or on the call, and send the other one to the to OBS for the stream. I bet I could. I mean, I can't do it right now, but I think that I could maybe do it sometime. That might be something to think about.
Yeah, I keep wanting to like comment on the gameplay, and I'm like, oh wait, that's like 30 seconds late, you know?
Yeah. I think I just saw where I'm supposed to go, but then I like immediately fell down.
Yeah, all someone said yellow key door.
Yeah, I found it. I see. I know where it is now, but let's see if I can do it. It's kind of like hidden off to the side a little bit.
Well, you know, speaking of Prodigy, I remember when my aunt showed me and my mom Prodigy on their computer. Like, you know, I had no idea what the internet was. And I thought that it was like an encyclopedia, like installed of information installed on their computer. Like I didn't understand that it was like going out there and getting something.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite maps in the original Doom.
Oh yeah, is this like what do you like about it? It just.
I don't know. That's a good question. It's just, it's really well laid out and it's got fun secrets. Wow, it looks really different though to me. Wow. Yeah, the textures are different.
Oh, I got. What are the pink guys called? Like, the only one I remember is the Caco Demons, which are like the, are those the flying things?
Yeah, the pink things goats. Are just called pinkies.
Yeah, they're like, just called Pinky Demons, yep.
Like, I understand that, like, people just... I think they might have just... Originally, I want to say maybe they're just called Demons, but I heard that the new Doom makes Pinky, like, canon. Is what I heard.
Like, the name is canon?
Yeah, they're just Pinkies.
Oh.
I think I heard something like that.
I'm surprised it wasn't already.
The cat, well, maybe it was. I don't know. What I heard could have not been entirely accurate. But
you know what? I want to say, actually, at the end of Doom 2, when you beat Doom 2, there's this screen where you get to see all the death animations of all the characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that the pink demon is called just a demon in Doom 2. So, but that's interesting that like now the new one makes Pinky Demon like canon.
Yeah. But yeah, Caco Demon's like the one that everyone knows.
Yeah.
Oh, I see some people in the chat talking about the how Digital Foundry is starting to do retro stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they just did like a really good one on the Saturn version of Quake about how
interesting.
Like it was kind of a miracle of programming. Really well done.
Yeah, I would actually love to collaborate with those guys.
Oh man, believe me, like, somehow it's very similar to like what we do, and I would love to do something with them.
But they're like super smart on like the on how the actual graphics technology runs, like the how the game engines like draw their graphics and what like the what the what the what the hardware strain on various effects are and stuff like that. Like that is so outside our realm. Like, we're talking about video signals. They're talking about how graphics are generated. I bet
there's a way we could collaborate with them.
Yeah.
if anybody is in the chat or he ever hears this, it's something we would love to do something like that. It'd be so cool.
But something that I've thought about, like I think it would be interesting to do like a whole episode on anti-aliasing.
Right.
Like what that is about and like the history of it. And because a lot of people like who might not understand anti-aliasing all that much, like we've gotten some comments that are like, does the GameCube have anti-aliasing like the N64? Like, as if, oh, that's a bad thing, you know?
Oh, right.
It's like
blast processing. It's just like a word to them, like, oh, bad now, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, no. Like, anti-aliasing is a good thing. And some people think that, like, we don't like anti-aliasing because, like, you know, we've talked about these. And first of all, that whole N64 hack episode, it was like just saying, like, here is a thing that people are interested in. We didn't necessarily say we thought it was an improvement or that it was universally an improvement for every game. Like,
right.
Jeez, this is intense. Sorry.
So it's been interesting seeing the range of opinions, but I think also a lot of misunderstanding of our intent with it.
Sure.
With a new episode, or not the new one, the
hack episode. Right. Yeah. So, like, I think it would just be interesting to do a whole episode, like, you know, on anti-aliasing, how the N64 handled anti-aliasing, and, you know, was it smart to do anti-aliasing on the N64, or was it really too early? Did it make sense to do it with 240p? You know, I mean, just various perspectives and opinions on that. And then, you know, then you have something like Uncharted 4. It's like, granted, I don't play that much on PC, but I have never seen like a PC game with anti-aliasing as good as Uncharted 4. Like, it's
oh, really?
Oh, it's unreal. That's maybe an exaggeration. I mean, if you are playing like a not very demanding game and just have like you know, multi-sampling.
Yeah, but also we should stress that we're not like big people. Like, I mean, it very well could exist. I mean,
yeah, but it's just like in a lot of PC games, like starting around like I want to say 2010, like their only anti-aliasing option was FXAA, which is it's a very efficient anti-aliasing, but it's like a very strong ratio of like, you know, it is not super demanding, but it looks pretty good, but it's not like super amazing. And some games would have that as their only option. You couldn't do anything more taxing if you had the hardware for it. So for a while there, like, you didn't have like these pristine anti-aliasing methods, even in a lot of PC games. And Uncharted 4, like, whatever they are doing in that, like, it's like 99.9% aliasing free. Like, it looks so freaking surreal. Like, I've never seen anything look that clean.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. Like, when I kind of started doing animation, I had some training in like 3D programs and stuff, and it was interesting to me working in a 3D program like Maya or something like that, and the amount of processing it took to actually, you know, put anti-aliasing on. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd have to render the same scene multiple times from and the camera basically, I think, shift slightly and to blend the edges, and it's just like, how are they ever going to do this in real time at 60 frames per second in video games, you know? And now it's so commonplace with different hacks, of course.
Right.
it's not necessarily using the same type of rendering, but
right.
It's like crazy. I love reading about that stuff and, yeah. and seeing new developments. Like when I first saw like depth of field in a video yeah. game in real time, it was just, whoa, I cannot believe this is happening. You know,
right,
I still like I'm a big sucker for depth of field. Like, you know, just, you know,
oh, yeah.
the way that we like use it in our just like. In our cameras too, you know, like in our show, yeah. in our show, just in general.
Huge fan of motion, like I, you know, oh, I think it's because I'm a video guy, but like, this wouldn't be the case for 2D games, but you know, I would be burned at the stake for saying that. That for 3D yeah, games, if you gave me a choice of a hard locked 30 frames per second. With motion blur, or a hard locked 60 frames per second with no motion blur, I would choose 30 frames with motion blur almost any time. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I just, yeah. I really like how motion blur looks. Like, again, Uncharted yeah. 4 is a great example. It's an almost flawless 30 frames per second, has surreal anti-aliasing, and has really excellent motion blur. And I look at that and I think, I don't see how 60 frames would improve the look of this. Now,
right.
now there's also the whole argument, and you know, I read Digital Foundry a lot, and you know, I see this, you know, quote by them. I do not understand this that well, but there's also the whole thing about, you know, 60 frames is more responsive. I literally do not get that. Like, I just don't know. I can't when I'm playing a 60 frames game, I'm thinking this looks really nice, but I'm not thinking this feels like smoother than other games. Like, okay. I mean, it's different for 2D. I don't know. I just don't really feel that. I know that that's like
yeah.
like completely blasphemous to a yeah. large.
There's already people in the chat saying like, I can't believe he's saying that.
Yeah, I can understand it coming from a video person though, for sure. I mean,
right? Because yeah. like the 30 frames look is like with the blur is pleasing to me. Like I remember when I was first getting into Adobe After Effects, and you know you've got that little checkbox for the. For the motion blur, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!" Like to me, it was like a complete. It was like the difference between something looking like real and sort of professional and not.
Yeah,
right. Well, I'm a big fan of.
Let me ask you this.
Oh, go ahead.
This may be a little off topic, because it's more film, I guess.
There's
but
nothing off topic in this. This.
What do you guys think? Since you guys must be. Very much in the video world. What do you guys think of Peter Jackson's attempt to do like
The 48 frames
48
per
frames per second
I intended to one time, you know, go to one of those movies and watch the 48 frames version, but I never could bring myself to, because it's like I want this to look like the Lord of the Rings, you
yeah
know?
That's exactly what I thought. Like I did not see it in the theater. Like I didn't see it like that. Because I didn't. It looks, it you know, based on making my TV like 120 hertz and making it like doubling the frame rate like that, it makes it looks. Yeah, it looks like it looks. It's like a.
Yeah.
Even though it looks incredibly clear, like it makes your TV seem like it's almost like a window, and these people are on the other side of it, like with a Blu-ray at least. I mean, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
what I heard people the general impression that I heard people say is that it made the world look faker. It looked, you know, you felt like you were looking at people wearing costumes, not, you know,
right.
characters yes. in a movie.
You're watching it on set being made.
Yeah, yeah. It felt faker because you could see. You know your time resolution was doubled essentially.
Yeah, it's so strange. I mean, I'm so interested in that problem, because there's all these filmmakers saying like, oh yeah, this is going to be the future, but like for the general public, like even my girlfriend, who is not a particularly, you know, she's not in this video realm, she's not thinking about these numbers and stuff, But when she watched it, she was like, this looks like garbage. it looks like a soap opera.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, technically this is very impressive. I'm like explaining all this stuff, but it's like, yeah, it does look like garbage. It does look like a soap opera. I don't know what to tell you.
And it's so weird because, I mean, there's, you know, the other argument, the logical argument that it is objectively better. And the only reason we don't like it is because we're not used to it. And I would agree that that is the logical argument, but it also doesn't change the fact that it just feels wrong to us. And there's a reason we do it the way we do it. It's
Does it feel wrong because we have this, you know, 100-year legacy of 24 frames per second, or does it feel wrong because is some intuitive thing that's it's tapping into? I don't know.
24 frames was chosen for economic reasons. I mean, it was not it was the slowest frame rate that they determined was acceptably perceived as continuous motion, so they went with it because it was cheapest.
Right. Yeah.
Fewer frames, the cheaper to make the film. So, I don't know. And then why, you know, video ended up being this different thing. And
I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, I went to the Seattle Science Fiction Film Festival, and there was a showing of a little experimental short film, like a 10-minute kind of deal. The director said he appreciated what, you know, Peter Jackson was doing with the 48 frames per second, but he said he's not going hard enough, like he's not taking it far enough. And he said higher and higher frame rates are even better. So he actually did this short film at 300 frames per second and projected it at 300 frames per second.
What kind of technology even makes that possible?
I know, right? It's insane. And it was 3D.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so I went and saw it because I'm just like so curious. Like, okay, is this gonna be better? Like, maybe he's right. Like, maybe 48 frames per second isn't enough. Make it higher and then it'll feel real, you know?
Yeah.
But it had the same exact effect on me. It was strange. It was like there's this law of diminishing returns or something above 30 frames per second or something. It was very strange.
Yeah. So now in your motion graphics work, what is the frame rate you are typically working with, or does it vary wildly?
Typically, I'm right at 30 frames per second because I do, at least these days, I'm doing more just straight up web content.
Mm-hmm.
I did used to work for a post-production house, and there it varied depending on what the commercial was shot at, and then it would get converted into 29.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it just kind of varied.
Yeah, We at work we use this. I can make my own graphics. I mean, probably would take significantly longer than you would, because it's not my main focus. But so we usually, like, if we have like a special program we're doing and we need like a unique graphics package for it, we go to this website called Video Hive, and you can buy a license to use a. You know, pre-made intros and supers and stuff. And so many of the projects I download from there are 25 frames per second.
So they're all PAL? Weird.
I guess they might be made from a PAL region, but I'm still surprised they don't default to a higher frame rate. Or maybe they have an option, I just never noticed it. But like the thing is, like I don't even bother because I'm literally the only person at work that like even understands
that cares.
Yeah. So I'm just like, it's not worth the effort trying to like figure out if I convert it to 30 frames, if that like screws up any of the keyframing or anything. I'm like, no one but me is going to be like that. You know, that doesn't look quite right. So
yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not even going to bring it up. I'm just going to live with it.
Yep.
See, absolutely. I'm like so afraid of like dying here. It's like the pink demon is like after me, like chasing me around this room, and I died. It's like there's I saw the exit. I should have gone. Stick to the right. It dumps into the exit door. It's too late now, as you obviously know by the time that you're hearing me say this. But
yeah, we normally started whenever YouTube opened up 60 frames, we started
our gameplay is at 60 frames because we do not like how the live action stuff looks.
Live action, right. Record in 30 frames. I used to be 24 frames because my old camera
only did 1080p at that, right?
It only did 30 frames and 24 frames, and at 1080p it capped out at 24. It used to be 24 frames on a 60 frames timeline, which it can make
It's generally fine. I mean, sometimes like the transitions even at 60 frames, like I kind of hate how they look.
Yeah, like and sometimes like there's like a few weird things. Like for example, if like we're in the middle of the screen and then we have one of our side boxes pop up and we slide ourselves to the side. Like we do it really quick in part to minimize the amount of time that you're like floating at 60 frames.
Right.
But it is 60 frames and it looks kind of weird. If you're running gameplay footage or something that needs to be 60 frames in the box, then you know you just live with it. But something I've been doing lately is if I'm doing like a post zoom in or out, because I'm shooting most of my B-roll in 4K now, which you know gives me a lot of freedom for you know doing a zoom and post production, because I'm editing on 1080p timeline. I can zoom in 200% and lose no detail. What I've been doing lately is when I do those movements, after I do my keyframing, I then make a nest and then change the sequence settings to be 30 frames. So it's a 30 frame sequence on a 60 frames timeline. And so that way that anything that has like a zoom or a pan that I added in post, it still looks like it was done. The whole thing was done at 30 frames.
Okay, so it looks like it was done in camera.
Right, but we got to keep the whole timeline 60 frames for gameplay.
Right.
But the dumb thing is we keep doing that even if the game we're featuring isn't even 60 frames, we're still.
Well, it doesn't matter because it's just
to be consistent. Well, because like our transition default length and stuff is like you know we have it set for 60 frames.
Right.
So if you're adding on 30 frames, most, timeline, like, it's going to be twice as long and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, very rarely do we, like, have things that are not 60 frames because we do almost entirely retro.
Yeah, except then, you start doing N64 stuff.
And it's like runs in, like...
Literally not 60 frames.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I love... Whenever I do something on N64, I love kind of scrubbing through the footage and just counting what the frame rate is, you know? And it's gosh, this is 12 frames per second right here. I cannot believe I used to play this all the time.
It's like, okay, how many taps of the arrow key is it going to take till anything changes?
Exactly. Yeah, once you get to 4 taps, it's like, oh, man. We're living in a golden age now, you know?
Yeah.
So how did you get into doing motion graphics? You go to school for it?
I did go to school for it, yeah. Studied, but my degree was electronic arts, which is kind of a unique degree to the school that I went to. But it focused on generally learning like a little bit of audio, a little bit of multimedia, a little bit of video, and a little bit of animation. And then you would then have your focus, your emphasis on those, you know,
media study was that.
Yeah, mine was fairly similar. Mine was a degree in communications, but you know, you had these different emphases you could do, and mine was called media arts.
Okay,
And I actually went to school like kind of really wanting to get more at least at one point, I thought I kind of wanted to do more like animation, sort of like you.
You have a thing. You should, you know, if you still have your animation, you should put it up for patrons. I bet you they would get a kick out of that.
It's so bad.
But still, like you did it when you're in
like a project.
I made this 3D animated Mario fan film.
Called Koopa Force.
Oh, well, it's a trailer, though it's not really in true trailer format, but like it's so dumb. Like it was this like when I went to college, like I don't know when exactly like Homestar Runner got its start, but like I was introduced to Homestar Runner my freshman year in college, and that was like a huge like I was already wanting to like learn to do animation and stuff. And I never really learned Flash, but I started trying. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't like this program. But like, you know, Homestar Runner was like a huge inspiration to me to like, because they, you know, they were, you know, making a living, making videos online like before that was like really a big thing, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, we are certainly not by any means at that point yet, but like, trying to pursue the sort of thing that we're doing right now like has been my dream since, you know, freshman year in college. And you know, I really like doing that sort of thing. And
cool,
you know, I never really pursued it until Corey was like, hey, we should make a YouTube channel. I'm like, yeah, let's do that.
Awesome. So yeah, what was the I guess what was the deciding factor to start a YouTube channel for you guys?
Corey kind of started. Well, it's a multifaceted thing. I mean, me and Corey were, you know, kind of friends through a website called The Backloggery, you know, we knew we were both video editors, so I think that's kind of why we hit it off, and working together, like looking into all this FrameMeister stuff. And we you know, just kept talking about it and like I don't really understand this and this RGB stuff, like what kind of cables do we need? And we kept just looking at until we finally started to understand bits and pieces of it. And Corey bought the FrameMeister and he showed me what he was getting. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. So I got the FrameMeister. And over time, we realized, like, we've got, like, this perfect streamlined setup for recording games, like, actual consoles, at the highest possible quality. And it's, like, streamlined for old games. It's streamlined for modern games. Like, we can record better footage than what most people are doing. We should do a YouTube channel. And Corey, like, had also started, like, kind of meeting up with people. Like, he lived in New York City at the time and, like, kind of went to some, like game journalist parties and stuff.
Well, it wasn't that. It was, you know, like, I was, at the time, you know, I was working at a post house and I was just not doing anything I was excited about.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I have this setup, so I might as well, like, there's a lot of like video editing in terms of like web and video games. Maybe I could do something. So I kind of like volunteered for like another website that I knew some people that had created. And I said, you know, like, I'll kind of make videos and stuff for you. Just to kind of like force myself into, you know,
doing
something, you know, because it's very possible just to say like, oh, I'd like to do this. And then,
I've been saying that for years.
You know? And never do it.
Yeah.
So I kind of did that, and, you know, I did a bunch of videos, and, like, just nothing really got views. And it was, like, never really promoted. And I said, if I'm going to put all this time and effort into doing these videos, like, maybe I should just, like, start my own channel and do it where I'm responsible for, you know, making it happen.
Yeah.
And
I think it's...
we were like talking about doing these VHS things. Like, I don't know if you've seen our like the VHS videos that we've done, the How to Beat things that are like.
I did see that. Yeah, I guess I saw the last one. I was just like, wow, this is amazing and so much. I mean, so much work.
Actually, I wish that our videos were that much work now.
Yeah, I mean, it was conceived as being like a relatively easy thing to do.
Yeah, it really is easy, and you can play through a new game, which we barely ever get a chance to do anyways, because...
Yeah, because we're always like focusing on retro stuff for the channel. Like, it didn't necessarily start off as like a retro-focused channel. Like, it was just like... it was just like whatever games we wanted to talk about. Like, in fact, we started off like doing modern games, but it was... you know, in a VHS style. And we, you know, it's so funny too, because, you know, like, we're like, wow, we can like capture all these games at high quality, and then the first videos we make are like running, we edit them and then run them through a VCR.
I killed myself.
Okay, I thought you were maybe doing some kind of an effect or layers of effects, but
VHS.
Well, Red Giant has a really good filter for it, like in the Red Giant universe, like a really good effect for it now. Yeah. But
yeah. And we've cheated like a few times and done that, like not for that series, but like if we wanted VHS,
because we did the series before the Red Giant even released that, anyways.
Yeah, like it's so funny because people were like, "What filter are you using?" It's like, you know, VCRs didn't like just stop existing at some point.
Yeah, you never sub $5 at Goodwill if you want.
Yeah, they exist and they function. Some of them function anyway.
Yeah. Uh oh. Yes,
we used.
What's that? Are you guys?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know if it's just me, but I keep on getting like frozen, losing audio from you guys just for like a split second.
It hasn't happened a lot for me, but occasionally.
Right. Yeah, just occasionally for me.
Okay.
But yeah, I was just gonna say. I mean, I was noticing several years ago, probably in like 2011 or so, all these gaming channels coming up and. Oftentimes, you know, the footage would just be really bad or some other technical thing was just not good. And I was like, I could probably do something a little bit better than that, you know. I know at least a little bit of the, you know, I know the animation, I know video work and that kind of thing, editing, and I'll just, you know, learn some of these other things. And figuring out, like, game capture software and hardware has been one of those kind of difficult hurdles that... At least back then, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, there weren't as many solutions and it wasn't as easy to discover on the internet.
Yeah.
But now it's like this huge sort of sub-industry, capture boxes and all this stuff.
Yeah, because like game streaming has taken off so much. Like that's...
Yeah.
Like everyone wants to stream and everyone's like watching streams and, you know, so... Yeah, like, you know, the companies that are normally, they're traditionally focused on making, like, professional video capture solutions, like, they also have their, you know, Gamer Extreme cards, you know? They've got these things that are, you know, focused on, you know, usually the primary difference is, they're actually a better card because they aren't like super picky about like specifications, like the Black Magic cards.
Yeah, we tried Black Magic before and it like does not see 240p. And if it's like, and I understand why they do it because Black Magic is, you know, like they're a professional company, like their stuff, you know, is for broadcast and it has to be to spec, like it has to be dead on. I understand that.
It's not good for game capture. At least they're. I think they do. I think Black Magic.
Oh, they work with like the. With like component
a game model now.
I think it does, yeah.
But you know, the ones we were using, you know, the Intensity Pro, which I, you know, I was like, oh man, I've got this HDMI capture card and this is awesome.
Yeah, you think
and
it'd
I was
perfect.
Using it for streams, but I didn't, you know, at the time that I first got it, I didn't even know what 240p was.
Right. Like why won't it see anything that's like composite? It's not.
Yeah, I was like, why can't I play my retro games through this?
Right.
You know, yeah. So I had no idea why, and then I realized like anything that is not the specification, it just will not accept. But
what did I die from? I don't even know what killed me. Sorry.
But yeah, it's interesting just how much that has evolved into its own, you know, market that isn't even all that niche anymore for these video tech companies. You know, they can tap into that market of people who want to stream, and the main thing they have to do is just, you know, throw the professional specifications out the window and add HDMI pass through and
yeah,
good to go.
Yeah, it's funny how you know, people like Angry Video Game Nerd, he's still using, as far as I know, he's still using like an old DVD recorder. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, like there's definitely a part of me that respects his dedication to that format, you yeah. know?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, like at this point, if he went, I can understand for like playing, but I feel like if he went, you know, if the quality of the game footage like became was like captured like up like through a FrameMeister, like I know that he has a FrameMeister, but he uses composite with it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But if he like switched over to RGB, like I don't think it would feel like an AVGN episode anymore.
Yeah, you've got to have those like color bars shimmering through and like
disappearing frames, you know, like when like I'm like, flashing,
you know,
and
he's got such a system for that, and it's like, you know, it's like his thing, because like I remember like years ago before, like I've never watched a whole lot of AVGN stuff, but I remember, you know, well,
he did a really good
started
episode on like how he made things.
Mm-hmm. It was before we started the channel, and I remember thinking like, this is really neat. Like, you know, it's maybe not the best thing, but he said like, you know, I remember he said something in that video that was like, you know, like this is playing video games to him, like sitting down and playing on a couch on an old TV.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you know, he could have probably been recording something better, but he wanted to feel that real old experience, you know, while actually playing the game. And you know, it may not look the best, but I do admire his dedication to his method.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Works with his style.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's, you know, like it's stayed the same pretty much. Like his camera equipment has gotten a lot better.
But yeah, I remember there was a switch between when he had like, I think he was doing 16:9 SD, and then suddenly he had this beautiful like HD camera, nice shallow depth of field, and it's like, whoa, someone got a new camera.
Yeah.
But that still works. Yeah.
Phantom Nod in the chat is saying Japan was really bad in the capture tech for a while. They use composite capture and DVD records and stream on Nico, which is pretty bad for a normal person. Now they're living up. You know, the capture card that Corey and I started the channel with was a StarTech PEX HD cap.
Yeah. And we always call it the PEX HD cam.
So. Yeah. Right. We don't, it's not our main card anymore, but we still have it. And the thing that was so nice about it was, one, it would record 240p, and two, it would do 60 frames and be completely, it just didn't care what kind of frame rate or resolution you threw at it. It was like, whatever. And so it was great for game capture.
But it's good because it specifically works for 240p. Like it sees it like perfect as 240p.
Right. The only downside was that it would not do 1080p at anything higher than 24 frames. And we eventually upgrade to the Avermedia Extreme Cap U3 or whatever it's called. But anyway, I say that to say that I believe it was Mycomsoft, the makers of the FrameMeister, who had a similar or identical card They use the exact same innards, so I don't know who
it's
actually
made. Yeah, I mean, it's just they're the same card. They're just they have different software with them, and you know, just like I believe that they're exactly the same.
But Microsoft, which is, you know, a Japanese company, because it's kind of actually been at the forefront of this sort of high quality captures type stuff for a while now, whether their products were widespread, but you know, I just point that out as, you know, they are a Japanese company that was making these things that I was kind of like, why is no one else making this, and why is this card so hard to import, you know? And then that's when we found out that the StarTech card was like the exact same thing, so we both got one.
Huh. And they have an updated version of it, you know, called the X-Capture 1.
Yeah.
There's also an internal version of that, I guess.
Yeah, we would still love to do like a capture card face-off sort of video.
Yeah, that's something we'd love to do in the future.
That would be interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to get a FrameMeister at some point. It's just not in the budget right now.
Yeah, it's expensive, but you know, when you have it, it's like, man, like it before you have it, it seems so expensive, and after you have it, it's like, man.
It's kind of true.
What
I mean,
doing my whole life
should cost a little more.
Yeah, I think it was when I saw your Winback episode. I went,
oh yeah,
man.
I commented on that.
Yeah, I commented on it. I was just like, man, I cannot believe how sharp this N64 footage looks.
Yeah, I remember you commented on that. And you know, the crazy thing is, like, just like a couple of months after that was like when, or maybe even a month after that was when the
HDMI.
The HDMI, the Ultra HDMI, I got got to try out the prototype, the near finished version of that.
Yeah.
And then it's this other huge jump. And I don't know if you saw our Conker's Bad Fur Day video, but all
Absolutely.
Of the N64 footage in that episode was recorded with the Ultra HDMI. And that is still like my absolute favorite thing that I've come across, like, in terms of technology since we started the RGB Masterclass series. Like, it's just,
yeah,
I just love that thing.
It's so cool. I love that was the one that had the option to do scan lines, and then it added also like a bloom to the highlights, right? That
it kind of like if you're going from like a black screen and to like, and then it goes to a bright scene, you can like actually see like the image like stretch as it gets brighter, like just subtly. It's very subtle.
Oh wow,
that's pretty cool.
Like you know how a CRT would do.
Yeah,
it's not like an actual like glow around the highlights or anything, but it's like the scan lines like actually expand as the scene is brighter.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like it's very good at approximating sort of that high quality PVM type look, because like the edge of a bright scan line will kind of have this sort of curved edge to it, very similar to how a PVM looks. Like, it's just, it is so good. By the way, I don't know if this has happened yet, but I saw Retrofixes, who did my he's not a lot of my RGB work. He's he did my Ultra HDMI. He did my RGB SNES Mini, and he just recently did my top loader NES for RGB, and fixed some issues with my Famicom. But anyway, he I saw him say on Twitter the other day that he is getting another stock of Ultra HDMI very soon. I don't know, maybe this week, maybe it already happened, I don't know, but very soon. But it will be extremely limited, he said. But if you are on the lookout for one,
anyone
in the chat, definitely keep an eye on retrofixes.com or his Twitter. I don't know where or how he's going to announce it, but if you have any interest in the Ultra HDMI, you might want to keep an eye out, because I know stock has been very low.
Yeah.
So, Bam, here's something I was wondering. Do you have, like, any, like, acting experience? Because I always, like, felt that your, like, on-camera bits are, like, really supernatural. Or I mean, not, like, supernatural. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're...
not like that good. I'm
like, you know what I mean? Like, you're very natural, it's like, godly. On-camera. I just didn't know if you had, like, improv experience or anything like that.
I played around a little bit in, like, high school. I was in a one act, you know, that kind of stuff, but nothing formal, really. Just kind of playing around. But yeah, no, I appreciate that. It takes a lot of takes.
yeah, right.
I can't. I'm not one of these people that can off the cuff speak very well. So, like, I script even my silliest little one off videos. Okay. You know.
So you're very very like similar to us. Like we.
Yeah.
Can't improv like at all.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, I'm terrible.
I mean, it's fine when you have other people to play off of.
Talking
but when
to
you're
us.
By yourself, no.
Yeah, talking to us in this Skype chat must be very different from an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bet.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, this episode that we're working on for hopefully it'll be out this coming weekend. Like, I cannot even believe how much time we've spent on this script for this, something that we didn't even think was going to be that hard.
Yeah, it's like, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, everything we do, it seems.
Yeah.
But,
let's do, like, green screen and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Not always, like, this episode's not going to be green screen.
I think that like, based on our setups and stuff, like, I think that... I mean, we got a lot of good feedback. I don't know if you saw, like, our making of episode that we just did, where we kind of, like, showed the, like, process and all of our equipment and stuff that we do.
Yeah, you did, like, a room tour and, like, a setup tour.
Right.
Yeah, that was cool.
There was a lot of, we got, like, a lot of positive feedback of people just kind of, like, thought that we, like, felt more natural and stuff when we were... In this episode. Okay, so someone said go on the right.
I thought you especially did. I felt like I was really stressed when I was shooting my on camera for that, because like it took all evening because I was doing it in all these different locations and
this room is insane. And then it's like, sorry, I really want to like beat this room, and I'm like, it's the shotgun guys, and then I run out of ammo. It's just the room that, like, kind of gets light and dark. Like this strobe lights.
Yeah. So there are still lighting effects, but it looks like they're not really affecting the sprites.
Yeah, I think they're kind of cheated lighting effects.
Yeah. Right?
Like, they're probably just, like, swapping between, like, different brightness of textures or something.
Yeah, some kind of hack like that.
I beat it. Oh, my gosh. But what was I saying? We got a lot of good feedback about us being in a more like non-green screen environment, so that we're gonna try to start doing that more.
Yeah, I like for like right now.
When like, it makes sense, we won't like RGB episodes will always be green screen.
Yeah, I like to shoot in different environments. Like it's just more fun sometimes. RGB will always be green screen, and I've got this background I use on my Rare after Nintendo stuff, and I'll continue to do that green screen. But like game focused episodes,
if it works, if it's appropriate.
Yeah, like those might be green screen, they might not. It just varies. Tips and tweaks will, I think, always be not green screen.
Right. Well, it was kind of in your first, was it? In your
first one was green screen, but I don't think that was conceived as a tips and tweaks.
Right.
I think it was made into a tips and tweaks later. I don't even remember what I don't even remember what kind of type of episode we called it originally.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, in terms of green screen, I think I'm going to go back to, like, I see Adam Zay saying, like, not a huge fan of the green screen in front of a photo look. I was thinking about going back to just, like, in terms of using in-game graphics as a mm-hmm. background if I'm green screening again. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to, like, have a little bit of movement and stuff. I think that that's what I'm going to do from now on.
I think, you know, it's until you, like, move yourself to, you know, put a side box in, like, it's actually, like, hard to tell that you're green screened, I think.
Yeah.
Me, it's a lot easier to tell, but for you, I think it's kind of hard to tell.
Well, we'll see what happens in the future.
But, yeah, I like doing non-green screen stuff. It kind of, in a lot of ways, makes things
easier. You do all your stuff on camera, like, all of your things on camera. I think, Bam, you do it like me, where you specifically write sections of your script of, like, okay, this part's going to be on camera now.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah,
yeah, I do it like I do everything all at once. I treat everything as if it could be on camera.
That gives you more freedom, really? Like coverage if you need it.
Yeah, least. It gives me the flexibility if I need it in post, but. And two, like, I feel like it helps keep me in this mindset of, like, carrying the same energy, like, through all the different lines, which, I mean, it's hard. I don't always keep it up as well as I'd like, but, you know, and sometimes I'm not like, there's no way this part's going to be on camera, but I still, you know, I just shoot all at once. That way, like, the audio is, like, in the same session, same environment. You know, it's not going to vary. So, you know, that's just how I do it.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, how many levels per episode are there in this?
There are 8 per episode, but then there's, like, a secret level for each episode, so 9 technically.
Okay.
Per episode.
What do you have to do to get the secret levels?
They are super secret. I don't even remember actually where this one was. It might have been a couple of maps ago.
I saw somebody say, like, well, why don't you take the secret exit? And the answer for that is because I didn't know it was there.
Yeah, I want to say it's maybe map 2 that has the secret exit, but yeah, they're pretty well hidden.
What I think is impressive about this is that you can go into areas that you think you've cleared out, and then, like, an enemy will just pop out of nowhere. And it's was, like, actually probably hiding before. Like, well, it's not, like, oh, we spawned it there just because.
No, I think they do spawn because it's, like, I think things appear when you do certain things. Like,
okay, yeah, yeah.
It is infamous for what I believe people call monster closets.
Yeah.
Where you basically, you know, you do a trigger and then something opens in the wall that just had a bunch of monsters on it.
Yeah. I can see where that would come from, especially in this.
Yeah, and I've dabbled a little bit in making maps, and it's interesting to look at kind of the way that they manipulate the engine to make the different monster closets. Like, there's literally sometimes you'll come across, like, little holes in walls, and they're literally, like, air ducts that lead back to some hidden room, and that's rigged up with a hidden warp that warps the monsters from that room into, like, wherever you are. And that air duct is there so that the monsters can hear, you know, your weapon going off or something. It's such a funny, like, workaround to make this make monsters well. Like warp in, yeah,
and to do that for so many levels, you know, like
put
the whole thing together, that's pretty crazy, you know. Yeah. Just so many times, like, think about it differently each time. But, like, how can I use this tool?
Nice. Yeah.
Monster claws, that sounds like a good And so the PC version has, like, you know, quick saves, right? I think that's another thing that... Or does it not have quick saves? You can't save wherever.
It does, yeah, it does. super helpful.
Yeah, so I could say, like, yeah,
that's more manageable, I guess.
Yeah.
So I mean, in some ways, it feels like saves coming, but I mean, that's just how the game is designed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no checkpoints or anything in this.
Yeah. Well, levels.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if it's like saving my game. I've got nothing on screen saying you want to save your game.
Well, that's not typical for 16-bit generation, though.
That, this is a lot of... It's a real commitment to play through the whole game in one sitting.
Does... Do 32X games save to the cart? I guess they must.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's interesting to me. You know, I've only been... really into Genesis, you know, the past 2 years or so. I mean, it's interesting because I'm so used to 16-bit games mostly being, you know, longer, somewhat longer adventures with, you know, and they almost universally have a save feature, you know, on Super Nintendo. Not always, but the games that I played on Super Nintendo has save features. And yeah, it's just such a shock going to Genesis and discovering, like, kind of not that many games save on the Genesis.
Huh.
Or at least yeah, it seems I guess that I could way see to
that.
Me.
I mean, the ones that needed to did.
Yeah, but it's a much more arcadey experience overall. Like, intentionally, I feel.
Hmm. I see somebody saying, "We do plan on doing a Dreamcast episode. We are going to do a PS2 episode."
Saturn is going to come before Dreamcast.
Yeah, with luck, they'll be this year, but. It's hard to say. I mean,
we can do a maximum.
It's June.
Of 12. Yeah, we can do a maximum of 12 RGB episodes a year. I mean, we try to do one a month. We just decided today that June is almost certainly not going to have an RGB episode unless we like can throw together the Too Many Games panel. By the way, we got Too Many Games panel.
Yeah, that's something I guess that...
It was not in...
we did not get the email. They said that they sent it.
It was not in our announcement video.
Right.
Because we didn't know. We thought we didn't get one because we didn't get an email. Supposedly, everyone was sent an email, but for some reason, the internet ate ours. And... And we literally didn't know we had a panel until we saw the preliminary schedule.
Right.
So if anyone is going to Too Many Games, unfortunately, it might not be the most convenient time for you. It is, correct me if I'm wrong, is it Friday at 3 o'clock or something?
3:30.
Like that?
It's like the 3:30. First day, like right at 3:30.
So yeah, it's the first day. I know a lot of people, like when they go to Too Many Games, usually they're people that are relatively close to Too Many Games, and you know they'll probably work on Friday, and so you know they don't actually get to the convention until later in the day. So it might be a bit early for some people's taste, but yeah, we are we are going to do a panel there. It'll be basically the same format as the MAGFest panel, but it will of course be the questions and answers pertaining to the people who are at Too Many Games.
Right.
But yeah, that'll be fun. Corey, you just got a question about your super gum bean from Jason's Customs.
Yes, that is where I got it. It's expensive, but the reason I did it is because I sold some games and got a lot more money for them than I was expecting. So I was like, I'm just gonna go for like the most expensive one.
Get the premium, the one you really want.
Yeah. And I see a question if there's a Super Gun episode in the works. There's definitely one in the works, like in my mind right now. I want to be able to cover like actual Super Guns, like several of them, and also other alternatives for playing arcade games at home.
And you need more boards too.
Yes, all I have is Ninja Turtles right now, so.
Saw a question asking what's in the pipeline for RGB. that we were going to this month do our Framemeister alternatives, but we've realized like this upcoming episode is going to be highly collaborative.
Yeah.
Corey is editing it, but I also need to provide a ton of material to.
Yes, the one that's out on Friday.
Yeah, it's going to be more involved and longer than we ever expected. It's going to be one of our longest episodes.
Well, we don't know that for sure. Yeah,
it'll be in the ballpark of 30.
Yeah, I think that we just have to realize that we're going to be one of those channels that has like a 20 to 30 minute episodes now. Like that's just how it's going to be. I doubt.
Well, sometimes they'll be like 12 minutes, but you know, like a single game or something. But I mean, we don't really force ourselves to make something a certain length. It just ends up being what it is.
Sure.
You know, whatever is right for covering the topic. But yes. So the Framemeister alternatives was going to be this month. But I am like still.
It'll be in July.
In the middle of tests and research. And I also got to do spend some more hands-on time with some Game Boy related stuff for the Game Boy RGB episode. So like probably what's looking like now is Framemeister alternatives will be, you know, which will include the OSSC.
Will be early in July.
Will be early July, and then probably August or September will be Game Boy. And Corey needs to do what's the next one in your pipeline for RGB? I forget.
Well, I was gonna do SCART switchers. I want to do that, but you know, like there's a lot of comments about
geometry.
Right? Like a lot of people really want geometry.
Yeah, you're a little scared of that episode.
Yeah, I'm a little scared of it. I think that's putting it lightly.
It would be good just to have that done. That one's like, that's probably the most requested 300 level episode.
Yes.
Because like people know we've been planning it for a while.
Yeah, we've teased it in like two different videos.
Yeah.
And one of those videos is over a year old now.
You're like, yeah, we're going to do this when we get to an episode that's all about CRTs.
And I know, but like, then the CRT episode was so much, it's like, we can't fit that in here.
Yeah. And you realize that like to do it justice, like it really did need to be its own
right
topic. Like in my mind, I'm thinking, well, how long could that episode be? But we always surprise ourselves in that regard.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
So, Bam, do you have any more of like the three part like you did with the Need for Speed, like a three part kind of review things that you did, like the nostalgia and the review and
I really liked doing that format. It didn't get many hits, so it was kind of a thing like, oh, maybe this will be a good pilot, and you know, it wasn't that successful. But I do want to do that again. I just don't know exactly for what. But I've got several games that I want to tap into. Several games that I've already recorded footage for, but it's just for me, it's just kind of a matter of balancing. Work and play
right.
With this, you know. I don't know how you guys do these.
Well, the only
really
reason
long episodes.
The only reason we're able to do what we do is because there's two of us.
Yeah.
If it was just one, like we like help each other. We were just talking about this yesterday or the day before about how like if we were not a team, like the channel would like neither one of us would have the. Like the motivation or anything that like continue on, and I think that
right.
That's,
like it's like exercise accountability partner, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They always say you're more successful when you're doing it with someone else, and that's absolutely the case here because it's like, you know, if I was just letting myself down by not getting an episode out, that'd be one thing, but you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got a partner in the business, and you know you got to get it done.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
what
you guys like, and GameSack, just so much good content. And
well, they're
just like,
huge. They're huge inspiration for us.
Yeah, they're great.
So what other shows do you watch? You have like any that you like follow pretty closely? Obviously, you watch Pat the NES Punk's podcast or video, the
yeah.
video, or do you, like it's really good the way he does that, where he you know spreads it out like into like individual videos.
Yeah, it's pretty
just,
smart.
Like, you just watch the stuff, and it like it, you know, like it probably does super well for him because you know
yeah.
you have so many videos getting, you know, like a few thousand views. You know, it's just like one record, like you just record a podcast with a video feed and you got
yeah.
daily videos for a week and a half.
Yeah, it's smart. And I didn't even realize exactly how he was doing that until I subscribed to his audio, just, you know, audio only podcast. And it's like, I think he doles out the videos like for a week or so, and then they post the audio podcast. I think that's how it works, but it's pretty smart. But yeah, I watch those guys. I watch James Rolfe. I watch, you know, Angry Video Game Nerd. I like GameSack.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Game Chasers a lot. They're fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of anyone else. Oh, I recently got onto. Are you guys familiar with Ahoy?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's just like one guy or what is like, or like a whole team, but they just did that like a really good. Was it Quake that they did?
Or was Quake was their most recent one. They did Doom a few months ago, and yeah, just the depth of research and the polished, you know, production values are just really impressive on that channel.
Yeah,
and yeah, I don't know if it's just one guy or what.
Well, it's like a pretty big channel. Like I was surprised. Like I had never heard of it until the Quake video. Quake is getting a lot of love. It's interesting. Like after the Digital Foundry thing, and then
yeah.
That. I just watched the beginning because it's really long, isn't it?
Quake. It's over an hour long. It's amazing. And it's good content. I mean, he really breaks down, you know, everything about the game from the technical aspects of the engine, like putting it into historical context, like why is this so much better than what came before, and
mm-hmm.
You know, all that stuff. And then he also breaks down, you know, gameplay and balancing and the weapons and all this stuff. So very in depth, pretty good though.
Like, how do you put like? That's crazy. I can't even imagine. I mean. I guess I wonder how long of gaps he has between each of his videos then. You know, like how long each one takes. I mean, he has
looks like he must spend a couple of months or something in production. I don't know.
Yeah, he has, isn't it something like 500,000 subscribers maybe? Or is it maybe like 300 or 400?
Yeah, he's up to 655.
Okay. How many views does the Quake history, yeah.
Quake has 319,000 right now.
Okay, so that definitely got shared around quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Right. So that's gonna do it for the game, and we're just like, if anyone has any questions, we always do like a little kind of chatting at the end to wrap things up.
Oh yeah, Game Historian Leon X3 mentioned Game Historian. He's good.
Yeah. We have some cool upcoming guests that we've like kind of talked to be on this stream with us.
Sweet.
Might be some surprised. That's we're really going to try to do that more, just like have more and more people on, because I think it's a lot more interesting. Like I think we were talking like 3 out of every 4 we'd like to have people on with us.
Cool.
Tech Assistant, next week's episode is controller adapters, basically console, using controllers from one console on another.
Right. It's not getting into PC adapters, which might be a topic of its own one day.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, there's a lot like you know, it's funny because I didn't even consider PC adapters like even at all for this.
Right. But I mean, you know, at this point you can basically use any console controller on a PC.
Right. We're going to be covering, I think it's five now that we're going to be covering in it. I mean, do we want to tell them what we're going to be covering?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
I'll start with mine. I am covering from RaphNet Technologies. It is a GameCube controller to N64 adapter.
Which really interests me, because I hate the N64
controller. Right. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, Corey was the one who received it. You know, it was given to us to review. And he gives it to me to be like my part of this controller adapters episode. And I'm thinking like, what do I need this for? Because I already like the N64 controller. Like, why do I need this? This isn't going to be very interesting to me. And it's actually like super cool because it is highly programmable.
It's really programmable. You were shocked and amazed by it.
Yeah, it's like a lot of fun, and like I've messed around like with trying Hori Pad stuff on it, and it's a lot of fun. So I'm actually really excited about that. I think also the NES retro receiver that Analog and 8-Bit Do just recently put out.
Yeah, there's no like real reviews of it out there.
Yeah, like I mean, I saw some little like, you know, point the webcam at the NES sort of reviews, but like, you know,
yeah.
So and then Corey is doing two or three things.
mine are obviously like, well, not one of them. Like, I'm doing a Genesis and Master System 2 Wii remote. Which is something that I was talking about it from the first time I played Freedom Planet. I said, I really want to play this with like a Genesis controller. And that's where I even figured out that like when somebody, I think it was Blade Blur X recommended RaphNet Technologies. And I was like, I wrote to him and said, can we do like a video on these? And then the other two are like a little bit more niche. I'm doing a, PS1 and 2 to Neo Geo, and also another thing where you can do, well, it works for a Super Gun and Neo Geo. It's like a DB15 input to USB, so you can use a I'm using it to use my my Street Fighter, like my fight stick, like the, for my PS3 on like my Neo Geo and Super Gun. So we'll see how it goes over. Hopefully people will think that it's interesting. We have no idea how the script ended up being like I think after you probably cut it down, it's probably like somewhere like 11 pages.
Yeah. Well, at first I thought, oh gosh, Corey's sections might be a little too long. And then, like, I started playing around with the N64 adapter and liked it a lot more than I expected to.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I love the GameCube controller. It's, like, one of my favorite all time. But, that sounds like fun.
You'll be surprised the kind of stuff you can do with it.
You know? Yeah, it's neat. It's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a unique-looking episode, too, for us.
Huh. I see. Josu Ramos is saying the DVI out for PC Engine adapter. Is that the one that Game Tech US just did a video on about it? Is it Game Tech? I always get Game Tech and Review Tech. Review Tech is the more just like is the guy that just kind of talks, and Game Tech is the guy that does the modding. Game Tech did a video about a. It upscales like PC Engine, and plugs right into the back, and it does HDMI or DVI out in 720p, but it just works with, you know, like the TurboGrafx and PC Engine, and it's like $400, but it's plug and play. I mean, we'd like to cover it, but we don't have that kind of money, really. But we'll see what happens when it comes time for the TurboGrafx and PC Engine episode. But it's like $368 or something. But
Harold asks, what about a video on the N64 RF adapter?
Specifically. I don't know. You bought an N64 RF adapter just so we could show it in one shot.
It was like $5 shipped.
Oh, we just need to show it.
I've actually got my upstairs N64 hooked up with it. And since I was just shooting N64 stuff for this episode, I thought, maybe I should actually hook it up with the S video cable, because like on my set, the camera like is kind of close to the TV. So I thought it would kind of show up badly if it was RF. I'm probably going to keep the NES hooked up with its RF, though. That's whatever. Most people hooked up with NES with RF back in the day.
Go ahead.
No.
In the recent game setup episode, what is the base that Corey is used to put his arcade PC board on when playing on the Super Gun? I just set it right on top of the IKEA thing. Actually, I used to have a bunch of stuff on top there, and I cleared it all off because of when I was getting when I knew I was getting the Super Gun. I was like, I needed a kind of a flat space that would not conduct any kind of static electricity. Any kind of guilty pleasures? Bam, you have any guilty pleasures?
I'm sure I do. In terms of gaming, let's see. Yeah. I don't know. I was thinking about starting a series that was basically pointing out terrible bugs in games that everyone loves, and make it call it something like this game is terrible and I love it, something like that. Because I'm just noticing so many of the old games that I love, just have these little quirks that make it, not technically perfect, but it's just perfect in a way,
nostalgic way. We were going to do, when we did the out as a games that are generally, we didn't know how to word it, but games that are generally disliked that we like.
Yeah. Like Final Fantasy 13.
Final Fantasy 13. We both like Final Fantasy 13. Whatever. Even Resident Evil 6, like I guess that could be considered a guilty pleasure of sorts. Yes, it's not what Resident Evil quote unquote should be, but the end of the day, I still find it to be an entertaining video game. It's still a fun game to play. So I guess I could think of that as a guilty pleasure of sorts.
It's so weird. Like, I don't even think of things like as guilty pleasures so much. I just
when I'm just talking to people about video games, like I'm not like I'm not embarrassed to talk about like liking this game or liking this game or not liking another game. It's just
we like what we like,
right?
Like what I like and don't like what I don't like. What can I say? Of course, I'm always trying to understand, like, why is this game the way it is? Like, why, if I don't like it, I'm always trying to go into it with the open minded perspective of like what's the right mindset to appreciate this game? And sometimes I can make it click, and sometimes maybe not.
Yeah, one recently for me was Rise, Son of Rome on the Xbox.
Oh, yeah. It's a good game.
And
I did a video on that. It was like a really early video.
It's
like my least favorite video I've ever done.
Is it our least viewed video?
No. I think that I think the Ratchet and Clank Into the Nexus might be our least viewed.
I hope that's.
I'm pretty sure that Rise has more views than Ratchet and Clank now. For a long time, it was the least viewed video.
That's so funny. Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, to me, that's one of those games that mechanically pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty repetitive, but it's gorgeous and it's just
so,
like,
good looking. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I'm not getting a whole lot out of it in terms of mechanics, but it's just somehow fun to play because I just love looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of a guilty pleasure, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it. I mean, I own it. I got that when I got my Xbox One. You know, like, that was like the main exclusive at the time. So I was like, you know, that's the one I'm going to get. You know, it's really, really easy to play, but, you know, it's just,
yeah.
Like those, like the finishing moves are so much fun to do. I should replay that sometime.
Yeah, it's a good one.
The Quake video we were talking about, there's two. There was one that Digital Foundry did. That was look at the Quake, the Saturn version of Quake. And the other one is Ahoy. Is that what it is? The game, like.
Yeah, Ahoy.
Ahoy Games or something like that. Is it Ahoy Game? No, I don't know. It's just like Ahoy something.
Maybe Retro Ahoy or something like that.
Yeah, if you did it like a search for Ahoy Quake, it would come up probably, especially if it has 300,000 views.
Yeah.
All right. Pretty much do it?
Yeah, I think that's going to do it. Bam, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you guys. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
And everybody in the chat should go subscribe to Dome Candy Games. Like, I noticed it came up as two different things. I saw it show up as Dome Candy Games, but also Bam Nation.
Yes. You know, that's one of those things with YouTube that I just got grandfathered in. And, it used to be I started the channel as, like, Bam Nation Games because that was kind of my gamer tag and a lot of the like Battlefield games and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, maybe I can just put some of my, you know, highlights on this channel. And then I decided from there to kind of turn it into this branded thing, you know. So it's a little bit schizophrenic in the earlier videos. But yeah, Dome Candy Games, because video games are like candy for your dome.
All righty.
All right, everybody. Have a good night.
All right, thanks. Good night.